Hey, boys and girls, grab your capes and cowls. It's that time again. Superhero Speak, episode 34. Hey, everyone. If you missed it, I was on another podcast last week called Crisis on Infinite Podcasts. You can find them on Rhymes with Geek. You can also find it on YouTube. Just search Crisis on Infinite Podcasts. It was a conversation about Grant Morrison, and it was a lot of fun. I think you guys should check it out because I think you'll enjoy it. This week is I and Jason Goldsmith sitting down talking about his really cool website called Comics Bin. Now, what Comics Bin is, it's the Netflix of digital comics. You pay a monthly subscription and you get unlimited downloads on all the comics they have available. It's a really cool website and I think you guys should all go check it out. Again, that's comicbins.net. Jason was a great guest. We talked about a lot of different stuff. So here we go. Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave, and this week we have a guest with us. He is the owner and operator of a website known as Comic Bin, and it's kind of like the Netflix of comic books, and we're going to have him tell us all about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Jason Goldsmith to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Dave.
No problem.
Yeah, so... Yeah, we are kind of like the Netflix. I like to differentiate that we're the Netflix for digital comics. People sometimes go like, how do you ship all those comics without getting them ruined? It's like, no, digital. But yes, paper comics would not work so well in the mail order shipping around business.
This is true.
So we've been around for about 2 years. We've got a good several hundred, about, I think last count was about 700, 800 comics on there from about 10 different publishers. We're always trying to add some more, which is great. So it's been really good. I love what I do because I get a chance to read all kinds of interesting new comics, getting them ready.
Right. So I actually had a chance to check the site out. It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's all right on the website, which is nice. You don't have to download any extras to use it. It's friendly in Chrome. So if you have an Android tablet, you can easily use use it on there. And it's nice because you just go in, click the magazine you want, the comic you want, and it comes right up. I had no issues with delays or anything like that. And it's really nice that there's a nice reader built in. So people really should definitely go check it out.
Yeah, we hope they do.
Yeah, no, actually... Because you guys have Top Cow on there, and the Darkness, which was a book I've always liked, so I was reading some of those on there.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of the Top Cow stuff. We're hoping to get more from them. We're kind of in a pilot phase with their content, trying to work stuff out. So, but we do have Witchblade and Darkness and Artifacts from their Rebirth. So those first three trade paperbacks for the Rebirth series. So if you're trying. Like if you're like, I wonder if I want to get into Top Cow, it's a really great jumping on place. You can get in there and get a pretty good sense of what those kind of three core books are all about. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, go start picking them up in your local comic shop for now. And then as we hopefully, broaden and deepen that relationship with them, we'll get some more of their books on.
Yeah. So when you start a website like this, I have to assume you're a fan of comic books.
Yeah.
To begin with.
Yeah, I am. The whole idea for this started, man, it's probably been almost 10 years ago. And, I started out actually, I think I got like a DVD of PDFs of one of the Spider-Man. I don't remember if it was Spectacular or Amazing Spider-Man from mm-hmm. Marvel. They used to put out these DVDs with, hundreds of comics on there.
Yes.
And that was cool. But the problem with it, of course, was if you didn't have the DVD, you couldn't read them. And mm-hmm. it took up a ton of space. And at the time, 10 years ago, you go like, oh man, like 5 gigs of comics on my hard drive. That's like a serious commitment to Spider-Man.
Yes.
And of course, the other thing being, it's like, and you really got to like Spider-Man because that was it. Like I got Spider-Man.
It was the first attempt of doing digital comics, and it was a neat idea. But right, like you said, you had to commit to buying the DVD, and it was that's all you had, and right. You had to put it all on your hard drive.
Yeah, and so I started looking at different, you know, what are the options out there, and, you know, there's obviously ironically, the best digital comic option, you know, 10 years ago was to go and get pirate CVZs and CBRs, which, you know, for me, isn't something I really want to do, right? I want to support the people who make the comics and make sure that people are getting paid.
Right.
So, you know, so I started thinking, I'm like, man, wouldn't it be cool if there's like an iTunes for comic books? And, you know, no one was really doing it. So I was just kind of kicking this idea around. And then I don't know if you remember, there was a website was announced, like, I think it was like 2006 timeframe, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Longbox.
Yes, yes.
And I don't think anything – I looked it up, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year ago, and it's like the website's still there, and I don't think it's changed since they first put it up whenever it was. And so I was like, oh, this is cool. So I kind of dropped the idea. I'm like, all right, someone's doing it. Perfect. I can kick back and wait for that to happen. Of course, mm-hmm. that didn't materialize. And then, you know, I remember the iPhone came out. I'm like, oh, that's the thing. Like, iPhone is going to be huge for comics. But, of course, you had the form factor issues. Reading a comic on an iPhone is kind of – it's all right, but it's not the best.
Right.
You know, and then the iPad came out, and obviously Comixology came out in there. And I was like, this is cool. But, you know, it hit me. I'm like, it's kind of weird to actually, like, collect in the same sense digital comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't sell them later.
Right,
what,
right.
What are you going to do? And, you know, and at that time, like 2007 timeframe, Netflix was just getting into the streaming thing. You know, this idea of subscription wasn't very big. I think, mm-hmm. I think maybe Napster had done subscription music and bombed. And so, right. So that wasn't really a big thing. But the more I thought about it and as sort of I saw Netflix developing, I'm like, that's what makes sense for digital comics, right? You know, let's have a system where I can pay, you know, here's my money. Mm-hmm. Now let me just read whatever I want. And because I don't want to save them. I don't want them on my hard drive. Like, right. I don't want to take up the space. I just, you know, let me read it. And then when I'm done with it, you know, you guys store it. And so that's kind of where the initial germ of the idea came from. And it sort of evolved from there and kind of developing it. Like, what would it look like to do digital comic subscriptions? How would you, you know, what's the best way to interact? So that's kind of where we started. And my co-founder and I got together actually in grad school and have been working on it. And so, you know, this is where we're kind of at this point where we've got a good foundation. Now we're mm-hmm. really looking to start growing the library.
Right. No, and actually, it's interesting because I really like – the more I think about it, I really like the format, you know, the pay a monthly or a six-month fee, and you can read whatever you want because, you know, there's a whole argument of, you know, digital versus traditional comics that's going on right now. And this model makes more sense to me because – with the with Comixology, you have to buy the book, and you see something by Top Cow in your local store, and you're not sure if you want to check it out or not. You can jump on your website, read, you know, a couple issues, and then if you're really into it, then you'll run out to the store and buy them to own them. You know, if you want them in your collection.
Yeah, exactly, and that's kind of funny. You know, on the there's that argument like comics, you know, printed versus digital. And for us, we look at it and go like, no, that's totally the wrong argument. It's not mm-hmm. comics. It's not printed or digital. It's let's do both. So, you know, that's how we view it. Have your subscription on a service, you know, on our service. I'd say, okay, I'm going to read all kinds of different stuff. And the things that I think are really cool and really good, then I'm going to go buy those comics. I'm going to go pick those up for my comic shop. I'm going to get my, you might add those to my pull list and pull those mm-hmm. down. And then the other stuff that's like maybe okay, well, I'm not going to, you know, get those. I'll just read those online and that's fine. But I think it gives people this great opportunity, especially to try out new publishers, new creative teams. Because that was one of the things I always ran to. You know, I'm a big X-Men geek. Like that's, you know, all the X books. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you start getting like, okay, I'm going to get every X-Men book that comes out in a month from Marvel. And that's like, okay, that's my whole comics budget.
Right.
And so, you know, you're in the store and you're like, well, I really want my books that I normally read, but that book looks kind of cool, but do I want to give up something? And that to me is a really unfortunate decision-making process for a lot of fans. That decision of, do I want to give up a book to try something new? And I think a lot of, especially collectors, we get in this mindset of, I need to have every book in the series, right?
Right.
If I'm collecting X-Men, I can't skip issue 40 because then I won't have it. So I have to buy that. And we just keep going down that path. And so then when we want to start picking up something new, we're like, no, I can't break the streak, man. I gotta have that. So,
right. Yeah, no. And it's true. And the other part of the argument, you know, people are watching what the big two do, right? They want to know what Marvel and DC is doing. And that's their concern. But what people don't realize is there, not only are there, you know, dozens and dozens of big publishers out there, there's hundreds of, or thousands of guys who are independently doing their books. And if they can get involved with a site like you and offer their books, you know, to people who would never, like, because they're selling them independently at cons. So people who would never go to a con on the East Coast, who might never see one of these books, could go to your website and discover them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's for sure something that I think is a huge deal for independents. And I look at what's going on with Kickstarter, you know, with comic books and especially with small independents. And that's just one way for them to expand the reach. I think this is another great way. It's a way to build that audience. And I think it's a great way to try a book out with an audience and develop an audience even before you go into printing. Because, I mean, if you're a writer, you obviously, you know, you're either going to collaborate with an artist and you guys are going to share some kind of revenue there, or you may have to pay an artist to do it. Now you throw in the cost of, you know, printing, you know, a few hundred copies or a few thousand copies to try and sell at cons. Now you're into like a pretty hefty chunk of change, and you don't know, is there an audience for this book? Whereas I think this way you can easily go out and say, okay, I'm going to put it on Comic Bin. I'm going to generate a little bit of money, which I can then actually set aside to help fund my books. You know, right. And I can check, I can work with the audience. I can see what people like. If I'm trying a storyline and it's on Comic Bin and I'm promoting the heck out of it and it's just not getting any traction, you know, maybe I'm not going to invest another, you know, $500 or $1,000 in artwork on that storyline. Maybe I'm going to go back and try a different story and see how that goes. And I think it gives people a lot more freedom to experiment, but actually still generate revenue, because you could obviously just make a web comic out of it and put it out there for free and hope for the best.
Right, right.
But you know, that's a lot harder. That's a lot more work on the creator's part. Now you're not only managing producing your comic book, but now you're managing producing the website and all that kind of stuff, and keeping that going.
No, definitely, yeah. And you know, I mean, I have people who listen to this podcast way back in episode 10. I interviewed two guys that are really good friends of mine. And they have a company, HB Comics, and like I said too, there's thousands of guys doing independents, and unfortunately, a lot of times what happens is they'll do one or two issues themselves, and because they have day jobs and whatnot, and they don't sell as well as they want, they drop off the radar. Well, these guys stuck with it, you know, and they have, they're working on their 14th issue now. So what they've been able to do is go back and do collected editions. So they did the first four, did it as a collected edition, and now that it was a book, they're able to sell it through Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're reaching more and more people, where for the longest time, they're from Boston, so they've been doing cons up and down the East Coast. I think the farthest west they go out is C2E2, you know, Chicago. So, you know, they've never been to California, you know, but now people in California can go to Amazon and buy their collected edition. Or, you know, again, if they were involved with a site like you, anyone in the world could easily just, you know, jump on and find it, you know. And it's a great book too, because it's called Laser Man, and it harkens back to the old days of comic books where superheroes, you know, it was fun to be a superhero, and they weren't as dark as they are now, and they weren't, you know, all doom and gloom and drama. And it's definitely a family-oriented book, and I just really wish more and more people would read it, you know?
Well, you have to get us connected up with them. Let us see if we can get them online, because that's the kind of stuff that we've been building our library from, is smaller guys who are putting out really cool stuff. And that's been a lot of fun. You know, you just get to see so many different people. You know, we obviously it's kind of funny. You know, you've got your friends are out on the East Coast, and we're kind of the same way. We're small, so we've hit all the West Coast shows, but getting out to the East Coast for us is kind of a big deal. So we'd love to get more content from across the country and across the world. We've actually got a few books from the UK, one book out of France. So we're getting some stuff from the international community as well, and we're really open to getting that as well, trying to get just as much different stuff as we can.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. That's when I was a kid, you know, it was obviously Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, you know, and like Americans read comics. I never thought about comics in other countries, you know, and as I got older and got involved with cons and everything, it's like, you know, guys I know and respect, they're like, oh yeah, we just went to this really great con in Australia, you know, or yeah, we went to one in France. I'm like, they read comics over there.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, you go, they read comics in France, and then you go like, no, they don't read comics in France. Like, this is like serious business in France. The French market's gigantic. It's huge, which you'd think we'd notice as like anime, you know, comes from. It's like, that's a French word, actually.
And this is true.
You know, and so you'd think we would have picked up, like, maybe there's this huge fan base of people who like this type of content in France. But yeah, there's huge markets in France, and traditions going back like to the 50s, like the same time frames as American comics as well. Britain's got a great, you know, history of comic books as well, going way, way back. So there's so much great stuff that's outside the U.S. And for the American audience especially, finding that stuff is always a challenge, because, you know, your local comic book shop, a lot of them, you know, their business model doesn't really allow them to say, I'm going to try importing a whole bunch of books from France and hope they sell. It's like, unless you happen to have a comic book shop like in a French, very heavily French community, you're probably going to lose your shirt on that. And most shops don't have the strength to handle that. So you end up getting, you know, the same stuff week after week, year after year. And of course, you know, most great shops will be happy to locate and order something for you if you come in looking for it. But if you're just walking in off the street and seeing what's on the shelf and kind of pulling from what they've got, you're never going to get exposed to some of these smaller things or things from outside the country. It's just, you know, it just doesn't work for the local comic shops.
Right. No, that's true. Yeah. So, backing up a little bit, changing gears just a little bit.
No problem.
You said you were a big X-Men fan. Are you a fan of the movies?
So that's a good question. it's interesting. Like, I remember the first movie. I was like, yeah, X-Men, this is awesome. And I remember the third movie being like, okay, this isn't so awesome. and I think, you know, honestly, part of it's, you know, you lost Singer and someone else had to pick up pick it up after he moved away to do other films. And so I don't know if X3 is really fair to judge the franchise. I haven't seen the Wolverine. I would like to. I haven't gotten around to it yet. The Origins Wolverine was pretty, that was definitely not a strong winner. There are parts of it, like the beginning montage is like, oh, you sit there and like, you see that beginning montage in Wolverine Origins, you're like, this is going to be great. And then you spend the rest of the movie being like, what happened to that guy who did the first part, because we'd like to get him back in here. I don't know, like, how did this go off the rails from like awesomeness in the beginning to I think the movies, I as a comic book fan, I'm just glad they're making movies in general. Like, that's fantastic. Even the bad ones, there's only been a couple comic book movies that I actually walked out of going like, wow, that was just painful. You know, one was Marvel's first Hulk movie that I actually went and saw that.
Yeah.
True story. I saw that in Canada on my honeymoon. I managed to stay married, which is kind of, you know, surprising, because my wife was not thrilled with having gone do that. And I was like, I'm sorry. That I was almost ready to walk out on that one. I was like, this is pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then Green Lantern from DC, that was a train wreck. Not a good movie.
No, that's true. No, because it's funny. I was asking about the X-Men movies because, I have a feeling we're probably around the same age. So when I was a kid and I read the X-books, like, Wolverine was a big character, but he had a standalone title, and he wasn't as involved with the X-Men, you know? Like, he would jump in here and there, but it wasn't like, you know, he was a huge part of the team, you know? It was Cyclops and Kitty Pride and Colossus and, you know, a lot of those guys. And Nightcrawler was another big one, you know, because Wolverine was a loner.
Yeah,
he wasn't a team player.
Exactly. He was kind of by definition, he was like, okay, we've got to bring Wolverine in because we need some, you know, we need that tank. We need that guy who can really just tear stuff up. But man, he's a pain to have around.
Right, exactly. So it was always like, you know, and he didn't, yeah, right. And he didn't really get along with them, you know. But I understand he was a popular character, but that's been my issue with all of them is they're all so Wolverine centric, you know, other than Origins, First Class, where yeah. Wolverine wasn't in it at all. So it's like, oh, okay, this is a decent X-Men movie.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, the thing I remember most about Wolverine in the X-books is really actually his relationship with Jubilee. Like, mm-hmm. that was actually one of the most fun things. You've got, like, you know, tough Wolverine, like, I hate everybody, and he's just, like, you know, super, like, loner hardcore, except for with, you know, Jubilee, who was at the time one of the most useless X-Men on the team. Like, she could barely do anything. I think they ramped her powers up, you know, down the road. But at the time, she's like, yeah, she's practically useless. And here's Wolverine, like, you're my best friend. How does this work? But it was really cool. It was like this, you know, this side of Wolverine. And I love that because you could see, unlike the movies, you kind of saw, yeah, he's kind of this tough guy, but he's really not. And in the movies, it's more like, you more feel like, oh, he's totally not a tough guy, but he tries to, you know, he tries to play that up. Like, I'm going to pretend I'm tough, but.
Right, right. And then, but yet they don't, they didn't utilize Kitty Pryde at all in the movies. So you lost that relationship, right? You know, and they tried to do it with Rogue, which, you know, because they made Rogue younger and whatnot, but it wasn't the same.
Yeah, it just hasn't played out the same. Although I will say that, you know, I love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. He's great. So I'm not going to complain about seeing a lot of him.
Yeah. I mean, he's in
doing the role, but
yeah, no, he's a great actor and yeah, but I mean, I could have lived with a series of just Wolverine movies as opposed to a series of X-Men movies, but they all starred Wolverine, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And something else, I kind of want to bring up now that we're on the topic of the movies, just because this news just came out this week. And have you been following any of the news related to the Man of Steel sequel?
I have. You know, I hang out on Twitter. I hang out on Facebook. So, yeah, I've definitely seen some debates.
But the latest is that they have now announced that Wonder Woman is going to be in the sequel as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, it seems to me like if I were to take my take on it, it totally seems to me like they're trying to dive into an Avengers style team up movie way before they've laid the groundwork. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, you kind of think, okay, well, they probably are going to want to have like the Flash in there at some point. And yeah, at the same time, they're building a Flash TV show. Mm-hmm. So it's like, like, is it going to be the Flash from the TV show, or now you can actually have two separate Flashes all within the DC universe? So I think, you know, watching what's going on with DC, I get it. It feels like they're kind of behind the ball, but they really haven't. I don't think they've learned the lesson that Marvel has taught, which is, you know, build these things slowly over time, develop the characters. I mean, if you look at like what Marvel's done, they're on their third iteration of the Hulk and they finally got it right.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, that's true.
Right. And so they, like, the first one, not quite right. The second one, better, but still not quite right. You know, now they think they've kind of got the Hulk figured out. They sort of beta tested it, and now he's working in the cinematic universe. And I just think DC's just diving in there, trying to, you know, capitalize so quick. And I have serious concerns about how it's all going to pan out. I mean, yeah, I was one of the people when they announced Affleck, I was like, I don't know how that's going to work, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe it'll be awesome. I don't know. But again, it's, you know, you're, for me, it was like, you're rebooting Batman. So one, so quickly after you just finished up the Nolan films.
Right.
And two, you're rebooting Batman with an old, relatively old actor. So you don't have a lot of life in that, you know, you can't, it's going to be hard to believe Affleck, you know, 10 years from now, still being Batman. It's going to be, that's going to be a pretty hard sell.
Right. Right.
You know,
well, and again, they explain it where they want to have a relationship with an older experienced Batman, you know, helping out a young inexperienced Superman. And I have never in the 75 years of Superman's existence ever thought of him needing help from Batman in that sense of training and teaching him what to do and those kinds of things. So that's like, people are like, oh, it'll be great. It'll be a good yin and yang type relationship. It's like, yeah, but it doesn't work with those two characters, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it works within the context of how Zack Snyder built Man of Steel, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, here's Superman and he's still trying to find himself. And it's like his, I'm just now coming out as Superman.
Right.
I'm not sure. I'm a huge fan of that take. I think there was a lot of stuff he did in Man of Steel to set up that, hey, Batman needs to come in and fix you because you're out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's never that for me. I think that mentoring role was always Pa Kent's, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you see that even in the first in Man of Steel, like you see Pa Kent being like, I'm going to teach you how to be like a good person.
Right.
Like, it's kind of cool that you're actually an alien, but you know, you're my son. So I'm going to make you this good, upstanding man. I'm going to make you this good, upstanding person.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have basically the whole rest, you know, the whole point after, spoiler alert, you know, Pa Kent dies, you know, Superman basically is like, eh, whatever. I'm going to throw Zod and we're going to just like duke it out in the middle of Metropolis and kill tens of thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, did you not learn the lessons that your dad tried to teach you?
Right, exactly.
And then to have Batman come in and fill that role, it's like, I think you missed the point. You know, Pa Kent theoretically has had it, you know, him under his wings for 20 some odd years. He should by now be pretty formed. He should understand, like, hey, you're special. Bullets don't hurt you, but us normal human beings are pretty squishy.
Right. No, that's true. And I kind of think that's one of the, you know, one of the things they said that, oh, they will show repercussions of him, you know, killing Zod in the next one. But I kind of wondered, was that the plan all along? Or was it, there was such an outcrying from the fan community about that, that they're like, okay, we have to address it in the next movie, you know?
My take on it, watching that scene, because I paid attention to that scene when I'm like, oh, he's actually going to do this. You know, I think watching that scene for me, it was pretty obvious that it was a tough choice for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that there was always a plan that this would have to impact him in some way. Like, he made a conscious choice to actually kill Zod. And so I think that, yeah, some character development from that choice has to play out in the next film.
Right.
And I will say, while the comic book Superman has always been like the super like Boy Scout, I'm never going to kill people guy, you know, watching the movie, I really don't know what choice he had. I didn't like it as a Superman fan going like, oh, this doesn't really jive with Superman killing people. But mm-hmm. by the same token, what was he going to do? You know, that's one of those things that's always interesting in comic books, is that dichotomy of you want these heroes to be heroic. At the same time, you're like, dude, seriously? Batman, Joker has killed like hundreds of people. You've had him in your, like, you could have ended this so many times.
Right. No, that's
and
true.
And yet you won't take that step. I'm going to lock him up. He always escapes, man. Always.
Well, so, yeah. And the thing, too, is I always like to point this out. I always ask people, you know, all right, yes, he killed Zod, and it did feel very dark in that movie because I think it's because he snapped his neck, and that was a very brutal way to kill somebody. But in Superman 2, what happens to Zod? In the original Richard Donner or the original movies with Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think
Superman takes away his powers, he crushes his hands, and he throws him off a cliff.
Yeah.
So, he killed Zod.
Yeah, it's unlikely he was going to survive that, huh?
Exactly. So, you know, yeah, he threw him in some kind of abyss thing that's in the Fortress of Solitude, and you can argue that it was some kind of cryogenic prison, but no, he threw him off a cliff, you know? So, it was canon, you know, that... killing Zod. I think the real issue again was it was just the brutal way it happened in the movie. It shocked everyone. It was a decent movie. I'm just afraid, like I said, now they've announced Wonder Woman is going to be in it. We know Batman is in it. And the only villain we know for sure is Lex Luthor. But it does sound like, you know, Man of Steel 2 is really becoming Justice League 1. But what is, number one, what's going to be a global threat? What's going to be a good enough global threat to explain bringing them together in the movie? It can't just be Lex, you know?
And that for me is actually the funny part, right? So, you know, it's like, what's a big enough global threat to bring them together? Everything that happened in the first movie. Right? Because Zod's like, I'm going to turn your entire planet into new Krypton. Mm-hmm. That to me would be, well, if Wonder Woman's around and Batman's around, perhaps they might have wanted to get involved in the whole Zod fight at that point.
Right.
So, and that's, I think that's some of the storytelling things that I don't know how they're going to work out. And I think it comes from that. It seems to me that Warner's approach has never been, let's create the shared cinematic universe. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, Marvel, I don't know which movie they started in. Perhaps it was Iron Man. That's what they claim, right? We started this all the way back in Iron Man. Perhaps. I don't know. If they did, that's incredible. But at some point, they very definitely made that decision to incorporate all these movies they were going to do into one shared universe. And I don't think DC's really got that plan mapped out. I don't think they've really got it figured out how all this stuff comes together.
Right.
And that's... Yeah, again, that's where for me it gets kind of weird because again, it's like we see signs of Wayne Corp in Man of Steel. We see, you know, all these different things, and this is a global threat, and the only person on the case is Superman. And I didn't think they had to show like Batman actually getting involved, but like during some of those, there's some parts where you could have like inserted a movie thing in the background in the TV, like Batman investigating, you know, strange alien transmissions, or
right.
you know, Wonder Woman fighting, or you know, looking for a solution to terraforming machine. There's some way you could have indicated like there's a greater superhero population,
right.
So I think for me, going through Man of Steel with no mention of anybody else anywhere in the universe, and being the first movie in the series, my assumption was always this is a very early point in the DCU, right? Mm-hmm. So Superman's like superhero zero. He's the first superhero.
Right.
And then he inspires everybody else. So Batman actually should be a younger than Superman version because he's like, I've been thinking about doing this, but now I really need to do something. I'm going to come out and actually make myself known. You know, Wonder Woman's like, well, I've been sort of checking out the world outside of Themyscira, and okay, now I really need to reveal myself. That would, to me, would make a whole lot more sense than, you know, Superman has no idea who Batman is, has never heard of him.
Right.
And yet he's been operating because he's an older version. So Batman's probably someone Superman has heard about growing up on the farm. Mm-hmm. So.
No, that's true. Right. And I think it's funny because when you go back to Iron Man 1, just that simple scene at the end, like up, you know, the after credit scene, you know, Iron Man 1 can stand on its own as a standalone movie all the way through. And then you have the scene at the end where he meets, oh my God, my brain just went blank. Head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Fury.
Thank you. Yeah. Colonel Fury shows up and he's like, you know, you think you're the only, you know, superhero out there, you know, and that was just setting up the universe. That's all they needed to do. Like, yes, there's other superheroes out there. You know, you think you're the only one who's doing this. You're not. And just so they could have done something simple like that in Man of Steel, like you said, a news report. Oh, you know, Batman investigating alien invasion or something like that. You know, Wonder Woman scene in Indian Ocean, you know, investigating alien ship, you know, something like that. But to just, you know, all of a sudden, boom, here's Justice League. Right. And again, there's no explanation of why there was no mention of them in the first one.
Yeah.
It's a little tough to swallow.
Yeah. And that was my biggest thing walking out. I'm like, I don't know how this turns into a universe, you know, and one thing I think that's unfortunate with the situation with Marvel and DC and their movies is that, you know, they do end up and even with our comic books too, is they end up absorbing so much of the industry, everything, like talk, everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get things like, you know, the casting of Wonder Woman. Once that happened, that's all I heard about. Like, just everything drowned out. And I think it happened, it was yesterday, right, when they announced it?
No, I think it was actually Tuesday.
Was it Tuesday? Okay. Yeah. But it's still, like, New Comic Book Day happened, and I didn't really hear a whole lot of New Comic Book Day anything. It was still, like, you know, more talk about Wonder Woman and the casting in the movie. And for me, you know, looking at the whole industry and how it's doing, that's really, really unfortunate that there's so much time and energy spent on Marvel and DC. And don't get me wrong, you know, if we had Marvel and DC, we'd be jumping for joy and it'd be the greatest thing ever. So right. If anyone from Marvel and DC is listening and you'd like to talk to us, please, we'd love to have you. But by the same token, there's so much other stuff going on in comics that a lot of people don't hear about.
Right.
And that to me is just really unfortunate because a lot of the really cool stuff that's happening in comics is really happening outside of those two big companies, partly because at this point now they're both part of gigantic media companies.
True.
You know, you're not going to see Marvel take huge risks with their characters now that they're part of Disney. And that's not to say that it's bad that they're part of Disney. I think that it's great. But you're also not going to see, you know, Cyclops go on a murderous rampage and level like all of New York City with bodies and blood and whatnot. It's not going to happen. You know, that's just not something you're going to have happen as part of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, an independent company like, say, you know, Image and what Kirkman's doing with Invincible, right? You can have a pretty brutal, you know, death of a major character and it can be right out there, or Walking Dead. You know, and they can do that because they're not part of those huge, companies. It gives them more freedom to do different things. And so, for a lot of things, I think the smaller independent companies, not that Image is small by any means, but there's so much more opportunity there to do different stuff and really take some chances that you can't do within the structure of the larger companies.
True. But you could also argue that taking your flagship character and having his body being taken over by one of his arch enemies is a fairly big risk to take at Marvel, you know, in the form of Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, and you know, and I will admit, like, I heard about that. I'm like, oh, this is going to be horrible. and I read the first parts of it, and I was like, no, this is actually really cool. I liked it. I think one of the things that's so cool about Superior is you now have a super, a hero who's actually kind of like, I'm going for the permanent solution. I'm not going to keep locking you up in jail. This is a waste of my time. I'm going to deal with you once and for all. But, for me, the thing about Superior Spider-Man is it's totally reversible.
Right. Right.
Marvel can run it for as long as they want. As long as it's popular, they can run it 50, 60, 150 issues. And then down the road, they just be like, yeah, he didn't quite erase 100% of Peter Parker. There's this little bit left, or there's this one spider bot that, has Peter's memories, and now it's worked its way back. And there's so many different ways they could undo that and put Peter Parker back.
Right, right. No, and actually, it's funny because we interviewed a guy on here who, his name escapes me. He runs a charity comics for kids, and he brought up a point very eloquently that they're at this point they're no longer really characters; they're properties. At the end of the day, it always happens. They'll revert back to the original formula for the property. So they will revert back to Peter Parker at some point, to get back to the original property, hit the reset button and start over, and maybe next time the Green Goblin will take over his body.
Yeah. I personally, just because it would be funny and Dan Slott seems like the kind of guy who might actually try it, I think it'd be fantastic if the way Peter Parker comes back is through a clone, just because it would be funny.
Well, it depends on your definition of funny.
But I just could see it. It's like just bring that back again. Ben Reilly comes back or whoever. It's like all of a sudden you've got the clone Peter Parker comes back and that's how he resolves it. For me that would be like I would so buy that issue.
or you find out that the body that Doc Ock took over was actually a clone.
Yeah, I mean, however you want to spin it, but something involving clones would just be – it would be the perfect way to reintroduce Peter Parker back into being Spider-Man.
That's not a bad idea.
And I don't need any money from that, Dan. If you were already planning it, like it's free, take it. I don't want to ruin anything.
No,
I don't care.
And it's funny because I actually thought they were going to bring Peter back with the Infinity storyline. It doesn't look like that's going to happen now, but I think it's going to be soon. But that's not a bad idea to involve the clones.
Just because you can.
Right. Exactly.
And at this point, you've made everybody so angry anyway that.
Well, it's funny because like you just said, it's one of those things where it's angered a lot of people. But then when you read a couple issues of it, you're like, this really isn't that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that's one of the things that I see a lot, just, being in the digital comics side of things, you kind of see it with old fans. There's a sense, and I think it's unfortunate, there's a sense in the comics community that we really need to, keep comics the way they are so that we can keep enjoying them the way we want to, and that's great. The only problem is now, I'm probably a young comic reader, and I'm not young, And the sense of, we don't want things to change. We want to make sure these comics are relevant to us as grown-ups and adults. And I look at the sales and I go, this is not the way to have comics 20 years from now.
Right.
When a very high-selling comic is in the 150,000 issue range. And I'm going to leave out The Walking Dead because it just occasionally does crazy things like sells 300,000 copies. And I think that it's actually a great example of one way comics can grow, which is reaching outside of its standard audience.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time go, how come none of the other movie-based properties are doing the same thing? The Arrow TV show is fantastic.
Right.
Why aren't we seeing massive, 350,000 issue sales for Green Arrow? And so I look at it and go, comics has to reach outside of what it's doing. We have to be kind of willing to, as an industry, tell the collectors and the hardcore long-term fans, we know you love these comics. you're in for a bumpy ride because we can't preserve everything exactly the way it is, because what just happens is over time the buyers get older and eventually we all die. That sounds horrible, right? You're like, well, but if we don't bring in new people, like eventually everyone who buys comics right now dies. And you see these numbers go from, you know, a great title selling 100,000 issues to being like 40,000 issues.
Right,
and
then right.
What happens? And that's one of the things that we hope we'll be able to help is, you know, you can come in and for $9, you get, you know, all these comic books. You can read everything and you can find out what you want. And so when your kids are like, hey, Dad, I want to, you know, can I get some comic books? You know, you walk down to the store and you go, oh, all right, I was hoping to not spend $40 to get you just a couple of things to try out. You know, this is a way to say, yeah, here's $9. You're a digital kid. You know how to use the iPad and the computer. Mm-hmm. Here, I signed you up for this $9 thing. Go read, find stuff you like. And then once they've got that sense of here's the stuff I'm into, then take them into the store and start teaching them about the collecting and preserving. And for the collectors, and this is one of my big selling points for collectors, because I know a lot of collectors like, digital comics just aren't the same. It's so much better. And yes, I get it. At the same time, if I'm a collector, like a really true collector, I'm super jazzed that I could potentially like go to my store, buy all my stuff, bag board it, put it into my collection in unread mint condition, mm-hmm. and still be able to read the book. Because if you look at what's happening, like, you know, Marvel's got their digital initiative where you can buy the book and you get the free code, but you technically are defacing the book to get it. You got to peel the sticker off the back, you know, right. to get the code out. And while those codes won't be useful 10 years from now to collectors, they're, you know, unlikely to be redeemable from a pristine book standpoint. It's like, hey, this is like unopened, unchanged. The code's still intact. This is like a perfect mint condition, but I can still read the book.
Right.
Rather than going like, okay, I'm going to buy this book for my collection, and then I'm going to buy a second copy for, you know, to read the story. Because that gets expensive.
No. It's so true, because it's like, you know, I'm in my home office, and over in one corner I've got four long boxes stacked up. Under my desk I've got two long boxes stacked up. And you know, more downstairs. And it's like, you know, I've read all the comics in those boxes, but at the same time, there are issues in there that I don't need to keep a hold of, you know, Spider-Man versus Big Wheel, you know, like, no one really wants to have that in your collection. You have it so you can say, oh, look, I have it and I can read it whenever I want, but I don't ever go back and read that one. Whereas now with digital, I can have the entire library at my fingertips, and if I want to read something, I can. But it allows you to say the special ones I can keep and have in my collection. You know, if I really enjoy, you know, The Long Halloween, I can run out and buy that and have that in my collection and always have those books. But you know, I actually have. I was just reading it the other day. An old Batman from the 70s where he became a vampire. There was a whole storyline, and it's really bad. And it's like, I don't need to keep this.
But I have it, so I don't want to get rid of it.
Right, exactly.
Well, and here's like one of the really funny things, because my wife asked me, she was like, hey, maybe your comic book collection's worth something. I'm like, yeah, mine's from the, like, my collection, the stuff I still have, because part of what I did is I really stopped collecting when I got to college and I couldn't afford to collect anymore. Mm-hmm. So most of my collection, like since college, has been I go to a con and I pick up, I'm like, oh, cool, here's like the 10-cent bin. And I just go in there and I'm like, oh, I like right. that character. And so I'll have like issue 1, 4, and 7 of an 8-part series. And I'm like, mm-hmm. whatever. And then I'll go on like Wikipedia and be like, okay, how did this end?
Yes.
I'm like, all right, I want to know what happened, but I don't want to know that badly where I'm going to go out and like hunt these books down, because I don't want to store them anymore. That's part of it. But she's like, hey, maybe your collection's worth something. I'm like, yeah, all my comics are from like the mid-90s. So I have tons of number ones, but there's like a million plus copies of those out there. These things were printed like, you know, everywhere. So in some respects, you know, from a collection standpoint, and like actually having your collection be worth something, anything that happens in the comic book industry that encourages people to trash their comic book collections, and I know that's sacrilege, but if you think about it, anything that causes those things to leave the market permanently is good for you as a collector.
Yes.
Like, you want all the guys like me who aren't really collectors to just be like, you know what? I can get this online for $9 a month. It's just part of my subscription. I'm just tossing these long boxes. They're out of here.
That's right.
Like, cool. Now we're down to like, there's only 999,000 copies of this thing out there anymore. Because I think, you know, 20 years from now, there's probably still going to be so many copies of like all the number one Image comics floating around that they're still not going to have a huge value. You know, it's just going to take a long time for those collections to age out to where people is like, yeah, my parents threw those away, or yeah, I was moving and I finally just said, forget it. And I tossed them. Like, I saw one of the Facebook groups I'm in, some guy's like, I just bought 26 copies of Dazzler number one, which is, wow. I mean, hey, more power to you, but like, there's just so many copies out there, like,
right?
All this kind of stuff. If you can buy 26 copies of Dazzler number one, it's going to take a long time before those are actually going to be like a valuable collectible.
Right. No, it's funny because I worked a con probably 5 years ago at this point, and Rob Liefeld was going to be there. And I was like, oh, cool. And I started going through my collection, and I'm like, I don't really have a lot of Liefeld books. And so I went to my local comic book shop, and I found X-Force number one, but they had like 10 copies, all still in the original collector's wrap, because it came with a collector's card. You know,
that's, I think I have a couple copies in my collection same way.
Right. Yeah. So it was like, all right. And it was, you know, it was in their $2 back long box too. So I was like, all right, I'll grab one of these, I'll unwrap it, and I'll have him sign this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I have like, I think I have like the Executioner's Song. Those are all polybagged from that same time frame,
mm-hmm.
You know? But I'm like, they're polybagged. They're in those original collector's bags. But man, I just don't know how long it's going to be before they're worth anything. I've even got some like books that at the time I paid a lot of money for. Like, mm-hmm. I think I have a Archer and Armstrong gold edition from Valiant signed by Jim Shooter. I'm like, and mm-hmm. I have the stickers like on the outside of the bag of how much I paid for it. And I looked it up. I'm like, all right, that's like 15% of what I paid for it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You know, I'm like, I got like 20 years before that becomes a big winner right there. And that's a lot of what, you know, caused me to switch more to my mindset towards doing the digital subscription. So I'm like, I realize I'm a reader. I love to read comics. That's, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm not a collector anymore. And it's, you know, part of it's just space, part of it's, you know, money. You know, that just for me is, you know, I kind of go storing these things and keeping track of them. Like, I have my collection, and somewhere I have a spreadsheet, I hope, maybe still, that has yes. that, like, what's in there. Like, on one of my multitude of hard drives and backups, I might have something. But, you know, I honestly don't even know specifically what's in my box. There's a few things that I know are in there because I know I bought them, and I know I haven't sold them.
Mm-hmm.
But I have like seven long boxes. I probably couldn't tell you I probably couldn't name more than 20 or 30 books that I know are in there for sure.
Right, right. No, that's where websites like Stash My Comics come into play. You know, I have an account with them. And I have all of my as of probably 5 years ago, I had all of my comics in there. And it's nice because it'll tell you what the current values are based on condition. And but I mean, I have also, you know, I work a lot of different conventions, and I know a lot of different people. So I end up with comics coming out of these conventions all the time. So, you know, I haven't reorganized them in a while. So yeah, I know how you're feeling. There's like the ones, you know, you definitely had. And it's funny because you're talking about, you know, when you bought a book, a back issue, you paid more money for it. And then now you look up the price and you're like, okay. I think one of the greatest examples of that, it's still worth a little bit, but nowhere near what it was The Killing Joke. When the first run came out of that, because that sold like wildfire, And then I remember, like, it was 2 weeks, maybe a month after it came out, going into my local store, and there it was up on the wall for $25. And I'm like, really? This just came out.
Yeah, that, I remember when you go into the store and like, that came out this, that came out today. Why is that? That's more than cover, that came out today, man. That's more than cover price.
Right.
Yeah, and I just, yeah, I think I missed out on, I miss out on a lot of stuff that I might be interested in buying just for that very reason. I go in, I go, you know, 28 pages for me at $3.99. That's just not enough entertainment value. Actually, I was figuring it out, you know, as part of, you know, making Comic Bin, trying to like figure out where do we want to price and what makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, depending on how fast you read and whether or not you go back and reread a book or not, if you mm-hmm. are like way into like the premium titles from Marvel and DC, those like $3.99 books, being a comic book fan, like per hour is more expensive than getting like good seats at a football game or at, in hockey. You know, it's like, it's more expensive than cable TV. It's like the most expensive entertainment you can possibly buy. And it just blew my mind when I sat down and did the, oh, I'm serious. Yeah. I ran the numbers. I'm like, it kind of depends. Like you go, okay, well I can read, yeah, I kind of figured on somewhere between 4 and 6 comics an hour, right? It says 28 pages, you know, 10 minutes, maybe 10 or 15 minutes to read a book for your standard size book. Mm-hmm. And you start adding up and you're like, okay, well, a football game's about 4 hours start to finish. So okay, if I do 6 books, that's like 25, $24 an hour. That's like $100 in comic books to get the same like 4 hour entertainment of a football game, going to a football game. Right. Those are some pretty, I mean, it depends on your team, but those are some pretty nice seats. Like you can go to the ballpark. You might even be able to squeeze a beer in there and a hot dog.
Yeah. Yeah,
it gets pretty pricey pretty quick. And I was just like, this is just kind of crazy. You know, when you break it down on a, like, you know, cost per hour, or, you know, per time frame, you know, obviously most people aren't going to buy, you know, $100 worth of comics for one sitting, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of people who maybe spend $30 a week, $40 a week at the comic shop. So, right. You know, that's $160 a month. That's a small car.
it's as expensive as smoking. So yeah. it's better for you than smoking, but still.
but at about the same expense. So
right.
Yeah, you know, you can buy a small car at that kind of price range. Right, there's a exactly. lot. And I joke, but if you start thinking about in terms of like kids, you know, how many 10-year-olds do you know who've got $160 a month to blow?
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah.
And that's 10 books a week. That's not, you know, 10 to 15 at the most. We're not talking, you know, a huge, that's not a huge reading habit.
Right.
Yeah, that's, you know, the top premium books from either Marvel or DC, or like some of each, but, you know, where does that leave your smaller publishers and things like that? And I think it just makes it really hard for that exploration, getting outside of the norm when you start thinking about it in terms of, wow, this really gets crazy. And I understand, like, producing the comics costs money. You got to pay the artists, you got to pay the writers. There's distribution costs. Jim Zub, I don't know if you, he does Skull Kickers for mm-hmm. Image.
Okay.
He did some breakdowns on, like, before he was with Image, you know, he did some breakdowns on what distribution costs are, you know, and he's like, yeah, as a creative team, we get basically nothing, because that by the time we pay everybody else in the chain, you know, the comic book shop and all these things, there's not a whole lot of money left. And so I mm-hmm. totally, the prices are what they are, not because, you know, publishers are being unreasonable or anything like that. That's just what it costs to have print books. And especially when you think about the volume, you know,
right.
A top book, I think if you go to like the Comicron, you know, the Comic Chronicles, which gives you sales breakdowns, and you look at sales, like once you get past like the top 5 or 6 books, mm-hmm. your everything is under 100,000 copies, and it drops off pretty quick to like
yeah.
20,000, 30,000, 40,000 issue range. Right. You know, that's not a lot of money. You got to print those, you got to warehouse them, you got to manage all that inventory. So there's not a huge amount of money to be made on most comic books. So yeah, you're getting, you know, those premium titles. Part of, you know, part of what's going on is they're subsidizing the smaller run titles. Mm-hmm. It's just how the economics of comics work. So for us, you know, we look at it and go, this is another revenue stream. It's not, you know, no publisher is going to replace their print comic book sales with a digital subscription service. It's just the revenue is not going to be there unless you reach incredible scale. Like, you'd have to be, you know, in the tens of millions of users before a publisher goes like, awesome, we don't have to print comics anymore.
Right.
But as an additional revenue stream, it helps, you know, that bringing in a little bit of money off of, especially the back catalog, because most of the back catalog for publishers, they see little to none of that money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Cause where do you go get, you know, oh, I want to get Spider-Man comics from 2007. Well, you're getting them from your local comic shop.
Right.
So the local comic stores are getting that, and that's great for them. As a publisher, you're not seeing any of that money. And so being able to make some money off of your back catalog in that way makes a lot of sense. And I personally don't think you're going to see a major impact to the local comic shops of losing revenue on the back catalog sales.
Right. No, because, that's true.
Because their back catalog is primarily going out to collectors.
Right.
You know, it's not someone who's brand new to comics walks in the door and goes, you know what I'd really like to do? I'd like to read Batman from the 70s.
Yeah.
Right? That's not what they're here for. They're like, no. Right now. So, you know, I think looking at, you know, expanding the market, you know, the subscriptions that we're trying to offer is a great way for the publishers to do that. It gives them a way to kind of introduce people to the comics at a price point that's better than piracy.
Right.
Right. Cause that's really who you're, you know, that's really at the end of the day, who you're competing with at that point. If you're charging more than people are willing to pay, but they're still interested in your product, that's where they go. They go to the pirate sites.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone knows in the industry that, you know, getting pirate comic books is pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate, but it's really easy.
Right.
And, you know, and I actually, you look at what Mark Waid's doing, you know, with Thrillbent, you know, he's being smart about it. He's like, yeah, it's incredibly easy to get pirate comic books. So you know what we're going to do? Here's our comic book. Download it. Please put it on the pirate sites for us. That'll let other people find out that we exist.
Right.
And, you know, then, you know, the hope is, and I think the music industry has shown this, when people find stuff they like, they will then go out, seek it out, and pay for it. The biggest music pirates are always the people who are spending the most on music. They might be pirating more than they're paying for, but they're still your biggest and best customers. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that the same won't be true in comic books. You know, you find people who you give them an opportunity to go spend a little bit of money and find all this stuff that they love. Like, hey, you know, I found all these great, cool comics on Comic Bin, and I didn't pay a lot to read them. But now, you know what? I really like this artist. I want to make sure he keeps making stuff. I'm going to go find his books. I'm going to go order mm-hmm. them online. I'm going to get the print copies. I'm going to go buy T-shirts or whatever else there might be. And so I think it really just helps reinforce the market rather than taking away. I see it very much as an additive service, not not fighting for the same dollars, but rather bringing in more people and having a bigger pie that everyone can take from.
No, and that's actually a very astute observation. You know, I mean, you comparing it to the music industry, I mean, you look at the early 2000s when the online music really took off, Napster and everything, and instead of embracing it, the music industry fought it for the longest time, and it really hurt them, you know, in the long run, hurt their image. It hurt the way artists look at them, you know, and those kinds of things. And, you know, it's funny. I don't know if you listen to the Nerdist podcast, but they just had Thomas Dolby on there. And Thomas Dolby, he was the She Blinded Me With Science, was his big hit back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this about him, but he had a startup in Silicon Valley and worked with a lot of different digital music companies and whatnot. And his perspective on the whole thing was because, you know, now you look at it and you sit there and Apple is credited as revolutionizing the whole digital music scene. But in truth, it wasn't. You know, there was a lot of things behind it. There were a lot of companies behind it. And what it really came down to is after Napster and after all of that mess, everyone was tired. And Apple came along and said, we want to try to come up with this iPod thing and this iTunes. You know, can we do it? And they were like, yeah, go, you guys can have it. We don't even care anymore. You know, and that's where that came from. And if the big publishers aren't careful, I mean, they're embracing it. So it's really not going to be the same thing. But, you know, there could be a chance of, you know, them trying to buck the system and then them losing face. And then someone's going to come along and just say, you know, let me give a shot at this. But no, I do think also another way to look at it is people don't consume media the same way they did 75 years ago. You know, we're a society where we want the story, we want to read it, and then we want to move on, you know, quick and done anymore. You know, there are still people who want to collect, but they're not as many as there used to be, you know. And I think if you can go out, you know, and I'm saying this to all our listeners too. Think about this. If your kid has a tablet, get them a subscription to Comic Bin. If you're a comic lover and you've had a hard time getting your kids into comics, and just say, here, you can go on here whenever you want and read any comic you want. You're going to get your kids into comics, you know, and then they might say, hey, let me go to the comic book store with you next time, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think, you know, yes, if you getting your kids into comics, I think something like this is much better. You know, I have two kids, they're 6 and 3. Mm-hmm. And like I watch them with, you know, they run Netflix. Like they go like, I want to watch Netflix. I'm like, you know how to use the remote? Go do it, right? What do you want me for?
Yes.
And they pick out, I mean, it's crazy. Like I go on there and like they're watching stuff. I'm like, I have never seen this cartoon ever. I have no idea what this is. How did you find this? Right. And they love it. They're like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm like, this cartoon's like at least 20 years old. Mm-hmm. Like at least it's not a modern cartoon. They're totally into it. I'm like, I hope they don't ask for toys because there's no way I'm going to find them. But they're into all kinds of crazy different stuff and they like different things. And they get to just figure out like, this is what I like. I like this show. I don't like that show. And they can just go in there and dig and find things. And that to me is great and is much easier for me as a parent. You know, I don't have to like go, okay, I'm going to take you to the comic book shop. You know, I can't even imagine letting my 3-year-old into a comic book shop to look for something she might like, right? Like right. I've taken her to a shop a couple times and every time I turn around, she's got like, she's pulling on books and she's yanking on the covers. I'm like, oh God, no, don't bend the cover. I like, you know, put that back. And it's just like, it's madness to take them to the show. I take them to a free comic book day. So there it's okay. Cause they can just pull whatever off the table and if they wreck it, so what?
Right.
But then we'll go shop inside the store, which isn't free comic book day. And I'm like, okay, we're going home. I'm done. I can't, it's too much. I can't do it. You know, having Comic Bin for them and they can just go like, here you go. It's all, you can't break it. You can watch, read whatever you want. If you get bored, you don't like the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever and let them discover the things that they think are cool. And then, you know, we can go from there. We can build off of that. And then I want to understand like, okay, these are things I think are cool. Yeah, now we can go to the comic book shop and check it out. Or maybe, you know, because I have young kids, maybe it's better like you're not ready to collect yet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, keep reading on the tablet where you're not going to fold them and crease them and rip pages out. And I'm going to sit there in the background and go like, no, that could have been so great.
Right.
And that's cool. And I think, you know, one of the things, you know, going back to with the publishers and business models and whatnot, I think one of the biggest things I see in the industry is a lot of it seems to be like in the echo chamber. So you hear a lot of publishers and talking about, you know, with fans. And so there's just like, yeah, we all want the same things. And fans really want, you know, we love print comics and publishers. And I don't see a lot of stuff going outside that sort of echo chamber of the industry and looking outside and going, how do we get people back? Because when we started looking into doing this, you know, we went to a couple conventions and I picked out guys my age. I'm like, hey, you're here with your kids. Like, what comics are you reading? Oh, I don't read comics anymore. So want, you're here with your kids to do a convention. You don't read comics anymore.
Right.
Yeah, and I used to do it. It's like, you know, they have, you have certain problems that come in as you get older, and depending on, you know, sort of where you come from, you know, sometimes you go like, yeah, I'm not going to try and convince my wife to let me spend $40 a week on comic books for me.
Right.
And she's just going to say no to that. She's like, there's so many other things we need, you know. So that's a problem we ran into with a lot of guys. A lot of them are just like, yeah, you know, I don't want – or storage, right? They're like, I know if I start buying print, I'm going to need to put them somewhere, and then I'm right. going to be beaten by my wife. It's just not going to happen. And that's not to say it's all guys. Like, there are women who collect comic books. Absolutely. I'm just – this is just some of the feedback we got from talking to people there. And that's that same issue. Like, I don't want to store this stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have space for it. It's just too much – effort and you know, but a lot of people want to get back into comics. There's this market out there of lapsed comic book readers who are like, I really want to get back in, but now they're at the point of, I don't know where my local comic book shop is. I really don't want print to pick up my space. I don't know where to jump in with new issues. And that's even that's something that digital can solve so much better than print. You know, if you go into the shop and you see like, oh, issue number 7. Mm-hmm. That's great. But when you go in the shop and you see issue number 197, okay, where do I start? Do I have to go back to issue 1 and like somehow manage right. to find 196 other issues? And we can easily go, you know, if you come in, you know, and you say like, hey, I'm really interested in Cyclops. What's going on with him? We can go through, if we had that whole Marvel collection, if we had everything they had, we could go and be like, okay, Cyclops, you know, here's like 6 great places you could jump in to stories about Cyclops. You can go back like just a couple months, jump mm-hmm. in here. You want to go back, you know, look at him 4 years ago. Here's another good jumping on point. And you can easily lay out for people based on tons of different criteria, like where they might want to jump in. It's not so easy with, say, a buy per issue model, whether it's print or digital, because you're still going like, well, yeah, go back and buy this issue and see if you like it. Go back and, well, maybe buy that issue and see if you like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a subscription service, you go, all right, I'm going to go try like the 2008 version of Cyclops. Wow, that guy's a jerk. No. let's try the 94 version. Oh, that guy's cool. All right, cool. I'm going to pick up there and start reading. And maybe by the time I read my way through to 2008, I won't mind him being a jerk anymore. I'll understand better.
No, and that's actually a great point too, because it's like, right, if it, like you said, you don't, if you're at 100, issue 197, you don't know where to jump in. If you buy 100, issue 197 and there's something about that issue you just don't like, you're not going to collect that series. But if you had read issue 10 and it was a better story and, you know, like you said, Cyclops wasn't a jerk back then, you might be like, oh, I love this. I'm going to collect this book. So, yeah, it's if you can go in and just read those and go wherever you want, it is a much better model. Yes.
Yeah.
So on that note, you know, that was it. We're at a little over an hour now, so where can everyone, where people can find you at comicbin.net, right?
Yeah, comicbin.net. That's the best URL to go find us and mm-hmm. you know, pop in. We do have, you know, you can sign up. You don't have to sign up and pay. You can sign up and like browse through stuff. There's a free preview. You can check out, I think right now it's like the first 10 pages of most books
mm-hmm.
and see what's there. There's a little bit of free content. That's one of the things that's fun about doing a subscription service is we've got some old like public domain stuff. So if you want to see what comic books were like in the 40s, there's some stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of fun. I got to put a little warning. Like we try to screen it, but like comic books in the 40s, different world.
yes.
from a political correctness standpoint. So, you know, just be warned. Like some of the stuff in there is kind of, you know, will it's not kind of, there's some stuff in there that will absolutely offend you if you find it. So, you know, just be aware. You want to kind of, you know, keep that in mind. You know, and for us, you know, some people say like, oh, you should censor it or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, our feeling is it's what was the era. You know, it was what was going on. So if you want to look at it from a historical perspective and understand what comic books are like, if we censor it, you don't understand what they're like.
Right.
And we do that with all the content too. You know, there's probably, I'm sure within even our modern stuff, there's some things people will be like, this is not cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's what's out there. So we kind of leave it open and that gives people a lot more perspective. We do, like, if there's something that's actually adult, we have some warnings on there, like, you know, this is adult material. We have a warning for that. You know, when we spot it, and if someone does spot something that's just like inappropriate, definitely let us know. We want to take care of it right away. We're not trying to, we're not purposefully out there trying to offend people, but it does, you know, there's different people have different standards, and we do try to be sensitive to that. But yeah, you can check it out, you know, at comicbin.net. Check out the book, see what's on there. You know, and the one thing, you know, from our perspective too, is, you know, working with publishers, you know, if you think that this is a great subscription model and this is something you'd like to see more of, you know, we talk with it, with our user base, right? If we, mm-hmm. if we go to a publisher and be like, we have 500,000 people, you'll likely will get whatever content you want, you know? So that's kind of one of the big things for us, is we're really trying to, you know, build our user base so that we can go and get the content from the bigger publishers. We're always working with different people. I actually have one of our publishers just sent me a couple new books that'll be going up in the next few days. And then I just today actually closed a deal with a small publisher out of the UK. So we'll be adding their content. But we're always looking for more. So like small publishers, if you want to get your stuff on there, definitely get in touch. It's right there on the bottom of the website. It's published at comicbin.net, but it's right there. Just click the link, send us an email, and we can get you set up.
And you're at comicbin on Twitter?
Yeah, it's at comicbin on Twitter. We're on Facebook. It's comicbin is our fan page on Facebook as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think technically we have a Google Plus site, but it's not. It needs to be maintained. That's one of the things. So we're working on that. And I think we have a Tumblr page too, which is comicbin, which we're working to get that kind of up to speed and up and running. But there's just a lot of social media to manage out there. So, but we're definitely trying to get out there. You know, it's been a lot of fun. The people we've met and the publishers especially are just fantastic. And we're always trying to get some more stuff.
Cool. So, all right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. And to everyone, listen, definitely go out, check out comicbin.net. And, if you're having issues with storage, you know, it's a great model to subjugate that. And, you know, Jason, thanks again for being on the show.
And, I really appreciate you having me. It's been a blast.
No problem. And, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you can also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John. You can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. And if you want, there's our Twitter account @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.